Hi, everyone, and welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me this week. This week, we're going to talk about animal guides. This is a topic I don't believe I've discussed at all on this podcast or probably anywhere else. So I wanted to make it a point this week to talk to you guys about just what animal guides are, the various types that we have, but also how to get in touch with your animal guides. A second thing to mention is that I'm going to be speaking to you during the second half of this podcast about what are called power animals or totem animals. I think most of us are familiar with, you know, this whole concept. However, I have found through quite a bit of literature the conflation of the words like, you know, animal guides, totems, and power animals, when in fact it turns out that there are differences, and I'll touch upon that as well. So let's go ahead and begin with this whole concept of an animal spirit guide. So what are they? Your animal spirit guides are messengers, or they're teachers who come to all of us in various forms of animals, and they come to guide us and protect us essentially throughout our lives. They may provide comfort, inspiration, or even important messages during, I would say, difficult times or even during difficult life transitions. They may also draw attention to parts of ourselves that require acknowledgement or even further exploration. So I want to tell you a little bit more about animal guides. So first and foremost, if you're asking yourself, do I have an animal guide? The answer is yes. Everybody has, at the very minimum, at least one. So just some background information about animal guides. Every animal has a powerful spirit, and this spirit may be its own or that of a being who uses the animal image to communicate messages of the world to humans. Every animal has its own talent, and if you make time to study the talents of that animal, it'll reveal the kind of what they kind of call the medicine of that animal, the magic of that animal, or even the power of the animal. Studying that can help you to develop even within your own life. So remember that every animal has a specialty. Now, one thing I am going to cover in a minute are the various types of animal guides that exist. One of the types is your lifelong animal. So I'm going to touch just a little bit about this right now. And this is super important to note because I found this piece of information in a variety of places. Your assigned lifelong animal, it's usually wild. Most researchers have said that your lifelong animal is not domesticated. I found this in the work of Ted Andrews in his seminal book, Animals Speak. I've also found it in Dr. Stephen Farmer's work, who's really well known for his study of shamanism and also animal guides and spirit animals, etc. And there's kind of like a common thread in that your lifelong guide, and everybody has one lifelong animal guide from the start of your life to the end, is a wild animal. So there, you know, according to Ted Andrews, there are a few exceptions, but even these exceptions are often just links to the true animal guide. So, for example, people may have dogs or cats as your guides. These have their own medicine and they have their own power, but the domesticated animal may only be a softened form of its wild counterpart. A dog may be a link to the wolf, coyote, for example, or any of the wild canine family. A cat may be a link to a member of the wild feline family, such as a panther, a tiger, a lion, etc. So for many, beginning with the domesticated form of your guide is a way of laying a foundation so that someday you'll be able to handle and work more effectively with its true power form. Another thing to note about animal guides, which I think is important, is that the animal chooses the person. It's not the other way around. Many people believe that they can just choose an animal and start communicating with it. Usually your ego will get in the way during these times. The individual chooses the animal he or she believes to be what is, you know, usually considered the most glamorous or the most powerful. rather than what is the most harmonious to the individual. And the results, most likely if you go this route, are ineffectual and they're going to be frustrating for you. No animal is better or worse than any other, even though we think so. Every animal's medicine is unique. And this is something that, again, if you do your study of animal guides, you'll find referenced in quite a few books that every animal carries with it its own medicine, its own energy, its own specialty, its own gifts, etc. So you'll see that as a common thread throughout the literature. It's always much better to be powerful in, let's just use as a total example here, mouse medicine than to be clumsy and ineffectual in eagle medicine. You will find your greatest success in the animal that comes to you. So instead of, again, picking what you consider to be the most powerful, whether it's of physical strength, etc., what seems to be the most glamorous or in vogue animal, if you try to work with the energy, most likely it will be ineffective. So you have to trust that the right animal is coming to you. So another thing that Ted Andrews says in his book, Animal Speak, if anybody's interested in taking a look at it, it's great. There's so much information in this book, some that I'll probably cover in a completely separate episode, just because it's something I've never explored and I think everybody might be interested in hearing it. One thing, according to Ted Andrews, he says that you have to develop a relationship with your animal guide. To communicate with them, he says, demands respect. You have to see things from their point of view, and you have to learn from their particular point of view. Animals aren't just going to warm up to you immediately. They have to learn to trust you and your limitations. And you have to learn to trust them and their limitations. Obviously, this takes time, patience, and a lot of practice. So you have to also honor your animal guide for its medicine to be effective in your life. The more you honor them, the more significance you give them within your life, the more powerful and effective they're going to become. So just a few ways that you can honor and even draw in the animal into your life, and I'm going to give you a side story in a minute. Number one, you can hang pictures of them in your house, in your car, wear them on a t-shirt, as dorky as all that sounds. Draw pictures of them. That's how you bring that energy into your space. And then study them. Learn as much as you can about that animal. I think this was a year and a half ago. I went to Albuquerque with a friend of mine for work, and we went to this shop, and there were little figurines of my animal. And I saw one, and I have it in my living room, and I love looking at it. And one of the ways for you to draw in the energy and the medicine of that animal is to obviously buy little figurines and put them all over your house. And I know some of you are thinking, well, I don't want to be the crazy cat lady with all the cats all over my house with a cat mug and a cat shirt and cat this and cat that. I completely understand. You don't have to go to the extremes to the point of it being embarrassing. However, find creative ways to inject, I would say, the energy of that animal into your life. And having pictures of them is actually one of the best ways to do this. So once you learn to work with the medicine of your animal guide, it then becomes a doorway to connecting with others of the animal realm. You're not really just limited to one animal guide. Each animal guide can teach you or add something to your life that other ones can't. So working with your animal guide will help to teach you how to align with the others. This way, if for example, you need greater strength, you'll have the capability of calling upon the image or even drawing upon the energy of, for example, of a bear. If you need speed, you can connect with the energy of a cheetah. So through your animal guide, you learn to align and shape shift to the energies of other animals and beings. That's kind of an important word there. That's something that Ted Andrews talks about very, very minimally in terms of shape-shifting. However, I think for most of us, we probably are more familiar with that information as it relates to shamanism. And we'll talk a little bit about that towards the end of this conversation. So although there are one or even several animal guides that may be strongest in your life and do remain with you throughout most of it, others do play a role. So for example, you may have one animal guide for a day. You may have a guide that assists you through a particular rough time in your life or even through a situation. One may come to stay with you and help you even through a cycle of several years. Another may be present when you do creative work. You're likely to have different animal guides for different areas of your life. There's really no limit to the animals that you can work with. The key, though, is to connect strongly and fully with at least one. And this expands the consciousness and opens the bridge to others more easily. Okay, so I want to talk to you now about the various types of animal guides. And this was new to me because I was always under the impression that we had one animal guide for life and that was it. And that was kind of your emblematic, I would say, animal. That was my understanding. But now that I'm not so sure about that, I feel like I've learned a lot over the past couple of weeks studying this. So here's kind of a list that I created based off of the research I've done in terms of the various types of animal guides. So first, you can have a messenger guide. And this guide comes to deliver a specific message or a lesson, whether it's of a spiritual nature, if it's a warning, and it essentially is going to leave your energy or leave you like even in your third eye or wherever it is you're seeing or experiencing this animal, it will disappear as soon as you've been able to understand what the message is. The next type of animal guide, which is funny in terms of what I'm about to say to you, because before I'd even read this, I had questioned it myself in terms of whether or not this existed. And then when I found this, it was quite cool, I think. Some of us can have what are called animal shadow guides, because it makes me think, do we have spirit guides in the world or in the spirit world that are shadow guides? So this particular animal spirit guide represents the shadow self or innermost fears that you have to overcome in order to progress on your path. It reminds us of the unhealed aspects of our being, which have been suppressed and they need attention. I think that's so important because learning to work with that type of energy, I feel like brings you to the truth of things that you've been holding within yourself and things that you've been not wanting to surface. Maybe they're even representative of just a lot of your fears as well. And working with that guide will offer you, I'm saying, an opportunity to confront those fears and then overcome them so you no longer have to deal with them on your path. So it might be a worthwhile endeavor to learn who your shadow guide is. I'm trying to do more research about that in the animal spirit world because it would be great to see that. But the one thing I want to say, and this is just my own take on this topic, is, I guess I forgot to say this at the beginning, my own animal guide for this lifetime is an owl. And it's funny because I thought it was one particular type of owl, and it's clearly not. Because there have been times in meditation, times in dreams, and times where I'm just laying down with my eyes closed, where I've seen a different type of animal, or excuse me, a different type of owl, which is the white barn owl. And it would have very red, intense, glowing eyes staring back at me. And I felt like it was a very, I don't know, a very negative animal, which I thought was also very strange. I couldn't understand how this animal could be this way. But then again, I've seen also in meditation, a wolf with yellow eyes growling at me. So I feel like those may be representative of times where I was met with my own shadow guide. So I think it is really something to look into, especially if you are someone who works with animals and is very drawn to this type of work. Okay. The other thing I kind of wanted to say about shadow guides is, according to the research that I've done, your shadow guide can actually change throughout your life depending upon your own particular process. And you have to learn and respect and understand your shadow energies. So maybe when you were younger, let's say you had, I don't know, some sort of little bird that was representative of your shadow guide. But then as you got older, maybe it's a bear, etc. So again, these are representative of what's going on with you, secrets that you're holding about yourself, your life, and your deep, your inner very deep, deep fears that need to be confronted during this time in your life or just on the path. Okay, so moving on to another type of guide, your journey guide. And this animal spirit guide, they come to you when you're at a crossroads in your life and you need to take an important decision just so that you can choose a path. So this guide is going to help you through that particular journey, and this guide represents the challenges and even the rewards. This guide is going to come to you to help you choose the best possible path at that time, and it will guide you when you are lost. So I think that, again, I don't know, as I'm telling you this information, I keep thinking of what the experience would be like to kind of go on that, what is it called, vision quest? I think that's the proper term. To sit down and really work with your journey guide, especially if you're at a major crossroads in your life where you hate what you've been doing, you know you're doing something only because you feel obligated to, but yet there's a yearning, a pull for a different type of life and a different type of experience. And I think, again, it's worthwhile to call in and ask for the assistance of your journey guide to show you, you know, what the options are and what the potential experiences can be and what the rewards will be of making that really crucial decision. So as I stated earlier, you also have a life animal guide, and this guide reflects your inner spiritual self. This guide is always with you, whether you recognize it or not. It's almost like your archangel or your guardian angel, excuse me, is always looking out for you. So it's similar to that. And your life animal guide reminds you of your innermost abilities and your strengths. Additionally, you can have what are called land animal guides. And land animals are usually associated with groundedness and physical and mental stability. And they are filled with, I would say, great intuition and having a really healthy awareness. There are also water guides, and they represent freedom and cleansing, and they are a symbol of, I would say, the universal consciousness that reveals things to us through our dreams and even through our subconscious mind. Bird guides. These guides are symbols of new transitions in life, and they assist us in matters of higher knowledge. They have excellent foresight. Reptile guides. So unsurprisingly, they are symbols of adaptation. They are incredibly intuitive, and they're very, very independent. And they are a reminder that every situation can be turned into one that is conducive for growth. So the next type of guide is called an insect guide. And these particular guides bear the gifts of patience, tenacity, and I would say non-attachment. They are communal, they are progressive, and they are proactive. So similar to reptiles, they are also quite adaptive and are the first ones to survive massive disasters. So I think that that's super helpful as well. So again, I would say if any of these appeal to you and you really want to get to know what type of guides you have, if you want to get in touch with, let's say, for example, again, your journey guide, it is... I would say invest your time and energy in getting to know your guides, because they will help you on your path. They'll provide you clarity and insight into who you are, maybe even some of the your inner obstacles that you have. But the biggest question I think that's on everybody's mind who's listening to this is, well, how the heck do I even get to meet my guide? Now, I didn't want to share with you a long list of the types of guides that exist. I mean, they're classified into these accessible categories. However, in terms of getting to meet your guide, one of the main ways is through meditation. We all know this already. If you call upon your guide without thinking, without the expectation that a very particular type of animal is supposed to show up. So if I were to sit down and say, okay, I'm calling upon my animal guide to join me or to show themselves, I'm not sitting down expecting it, you know, to be a bear just because I like bears. You have to, again, as Ted Andrews said, accept who it is that shows themselves to you. And some people really hate the idea of sitting down, meditating, and then they'll see something like a chicken. I've heard this whole story before about somebody having a chicken guide and they were just so ticked off about it. But again, every animal has its own medicine. It has its own energy. It has its own skill set. And again, we have to see from its point of view what it has to offer. And it's reminiscent of who you are and what skills that you have and your own particular abilities, your strengths, and maybe even your own weaknesses. So again, when you sit down to meditate and call in your guide, your animal guide from the animal kingdom or the animal realm, don't sit down with the expectation that you should already know what it is, because maybe you think you're a very strong person. Trust that the universe is sending you the exact type of animal that is really representative of who you are. And if you meditate and you're the kind of person who doesn't see, and I think there are a lot of people who feel that way, like, oh my God, I meditate 15 minutes, like 3 times a day, and I don't see crap, so this isn't going to work for me. I understand. What you can do is ask them to come into your dreams. Call upon them and just ask them to join you, and you might be surprised how they show up. I can't guarantee it's going to be a friendly encounter, but what I can say is that they will definitely show up if you really want to know and work with that type of energy. People have asked me, how have I met my animal guide? Kind of unintentionally. So when I was studying mediumship and other forms in the beginning, I ended up taking a quick class with some friends who I'd been practicing with for some time, and we went to an animal guide meditation class, and that's where I learned some stuff about it. And when I sat down to meditate, I was quite shocked that it was an owl, because I didn't expect that. I didn't know what to think. But what's funny is ever since then, I've dreamt about them. And one particular dream, I was walking with a group of people. I feel like I was walking in a redwood forest, and to my left, I told everybody, I'll be back. There's something I really need to go see. There's something waiting for me. And when I walked over there, there were 4 or 5, what are they called? Great horned owls. And they were huge. They were over 4 feet tall, each one of them, on the ground walking in a big circle. And I was supposed to stand in the circle while they were walking around me. And I was in awe of their size. And I couldn't believe it when I woke up that they came. So they will come. And sometimes they'll come in more frequently, even when you don't call on them, because there's something about their skill that you need to see, that you need to use and harness for something that you're going through in your life. So again, if you are the kind of person who doesn't see anything in meditation, allow them to come into your dreams. But the other thing that was said in terms of how to call in the energy of that animal into your life, and it's so true, is that you need to bring things into your life, into your house, that are representative of that animal. So again, for example, if I wanted to work with the owl more closely, I would not just have one figurine of the owl. I might have one, just one, maybe a small one in every room. I might wear a necklace with an owl on it, earrings. I might wear socks with the owl on it. I may have a stuffed owl. And I remember from above, my guy telling me, if you really want to work with us, you have to, you know, focus your energy completely upon it. He was like, remember, what you focus on expands. So you got to put all of your energy into that. So I'm telling you what he told me. If you really want to work with, let's say your animal is an eagle, then everything needs to become eagle in your life for a while. So I would say those are the biggest ways to kind of get your animal to come into your life and to reveal themselves to you. Again, they may come to you very unexpectedly, and receive what they have to say, receive what they have to show you. There's something very important, especially if they start coming into your dreams quite frequently. There's something that you need to see, something that you're missing in your life. Now, there was something that Ted Andrews said in his book that most people feel like it's a competition to have the coolest animal. Just trust what you have, even if it's a little mouse. So how else can you tell? Let's say that you're not getting it in meditation, and then let's say that they're not coming into your dreams. How else can you tell what your animal guide might be? Well, I will tell you to do this. Go out into nature. Go take a walk. Now, before you go out on this walk, on this path, wherever it may be, I want you to talk with your spirit guide and even talk with your animal guide, even if you can't see, hear, or feel them, and just put it out there saying, hey, I really want to connect with you. I'm going to go on this walk. I'm really hopeful that outside, when I'm observing what's going on around outside, the trees, the ground, that something is going to catch my eye and that I'll see it over and over and over, thus giving you the message, here I am. This is what, you know, this is your guide. So being out in nature is one of the greatest ways to find your animal guide, because the animal will be represented there, hopefully, unless it's a lion, which you don't want out there, or a bear or something that could, that's predatorial, that can eat you alive. So that's really another way to connect with your animal if it's out in your surroundings. Another way to discern who your animal is to ask yourself these questions. Did you have a favorite animal when you were younger? Or did you have a favorite type of pet? Perhaps there's an animal that you feel drawn to without understanding why. So when you visit, you know, when you have gone to visit a zoo, or if you've been at an aquarium, is there an animal that you wanted to see first, that you know you had to see or you had to make sure to see? Take note of that. Chances are there's a strong connection there for a reason. And if you know, if you have been able to gather that over the years it's been the same animal over and over, chances are this is probably also your guide. So for example, I was giving a reading one time to a girl, and she never asked me about her animal guide, but my God, all I could see were giraffes and had nothing of relevance to do with her crush, her like personal relationship. All I could see was, my God, giraffe, giraffe, giraffe. But what's so funny is, for me, giraffes are about foresight, being able to see many steps ahead. And I told this girl, I said, look, before we can even get to your love life, I have to tell you that all I see in your space are giraffes. And she laughed and she said, you know, that's my favorite animal. I don't know why, since I was a kid, I was obsessed with them. And I felt like that was her own animal guide. So that also can be a way of accessing your animal guide. Okay, so here's something else that's kind of cool you can ask yourself. Number one, has there been an animal that has always scared you, but at the same time, it's been very intriguing to you? It's interesting that sometimes that might be the animal that is your guide. There's a message in that for you if that is the case, and I would probably look deeper into that. Next question to ask yourself, has there always been an animal that you have frequently seen near your home, or that you feel like is always watching you or is always around you? I want you to really think about that. If that has been the case for you, then again, most likely that is your animal guide. And I would like to say, because you're probably thinking, well, is that my animal guide or is that just an animal message of the day? Either or. However, if it is repetitive throughout the duration of your life, I would say that is your animal guide. If an animal comes to you repeatedly out of the blue, a day, a week, there is definitely a message in that for you. And I would get to know what that animal symbolizes. What medicine does it carry? What is the message there? And I'm going to write this down because there's something I need to say about this and I want to forget. Okay. The other thing you can do, which I'm always skeptical of because it's just me, but there are always animals, colors, shapes, etc., that are attributed to your zodiac sign. We see this in many cultures. So if that is your niche, then you can trust that as your go-to in terms of which animal might be your animal guide and might be most representative of your guide as well. Another way to understand who that guide might be is seeking a shaman or a qualified person somebody who's very well trained in this type of work, who can help you identify who your animal guide is. Now, what I wanted to say earlier is that there are so many different meanings attached to each potential animal guide. And it's different for everybody. So for example, raccoon for me means having two faces. That may not be what it means for everybody else. Some other people think raccoons are extremely resourceful or dirty. So it's all, you know, it's the meaning, the message that comes from, let's say, that animal is going to be specific to your interpretation or belief about them. If you pick up a book on animal guides that has definitions of each animal, and that definition doesn't work for you, then scrap it. Trust what it is for you and keep it, because you have to remember your guides are going to work with your own knowledge set. However you have interpreted something, however you have defined something, that's their point of reference. So again, for me, when I see on any given day, or on a very particular day, excuse me, 5 freaking butterflies, I know, oh my God, some big change is about to come in my life, because that has been the situation. That's how my experience has been. The same thing with, for example, an elephant. There we go. Trying to give you examples from my own life. Whenever I have seen an elephant in meditation, I know that that elephant is there, not as my animal guide, but that is a messenger guide to show me, hey, there are some obstacles that are coming up for you. And then when it comes to me again and it throws its trunk up, I know they're telling me you're going to overcome them easily. Boom. This has been a recurrence because for some reason, unbeknownst to me, animals come to me a lot in meditation to come bring messages. Now, another way that an animal can bring you a message in meditation, for example, is, and this happens to me quite frequently, is to literally hand you a message in meditation. So for example, I have a very strong connection to dogs, and all types of dogs will come to me in my dreams or in meditation to drop a scroll in my lap that contains a bit of information for my journey. That can also happen to you. I don't know what your experience is going to be like. I'm just giving you my own stories, but because of these experiences, I've attached a meaning, and that meaning is what it holds for me moving forward. And again, my guides use that as a point of reference. So for some people, the crow, a deer, a dolphin, a bear, a buffalo has totally different meanings. Please do not go to everybody else for understanding. Trust your own gut for what it means for you. Super important. Okay, so that's everything I would like to say about animal guides. If you spend some time drawing animals, studying animals, that will expand your relationship with the animal realm on the other side. If you've always just wanted to jump in and explore this and just bridge that connection, start reading about it. Truthfully, it's simple as that. Start learning about animal guides. Call them in. Go out into nature more. Donate to wildlife organization. Go and work with animals to help heal them. It will change your relationship with the spirit realm, and it will really bridge that gap for you. Believe it. Don't question it so much. Many people question, and it keeps them from taking that step. Just take the step. Okay, so now I kind of wanted to talk to you about this whole notion of power animals / totem animals, because even in Ted Andrews' book, he conflates totem, power, and animal guides. He pretty much says that, oh, you'll see it called this and that, but it's all the same. Not so much. If you read the work of Stephen Farmer, who I said earlier is, I think he studied shamanism for quite some time, and he works very well with the animal, this I would say spirit animal realm. He differentiates these terms, and he says that, you know, animal spirit guides or spirit animals is one thing, which is what I just discussed, but then and this is something he explicitly says, in shamanic and indigenous cultures, they're usually called totem or power animals, so there is a difference here. Often, you know, these terms are used interchangeably, but there are subtle differences in their meaning. So let's talk about totem / power animal, which those two are the same. So first, a totem animal is typically, or power animal, is typically one that is shared by a family, clan, or group. That is totally different than your animal guide. So again, just to revisit this, your totem / power animal is one that is shared by a family, clan, or a group. So in many indigenous cultures, the family you were born into will have a totem animal in common. And thinking about this with my own family, because you guys are probably thinking, what the heck about my family? I actually feel like it's really true for my family, just sitting here thinking about that. So the term power animal, it really has its origins in shamanism. And this is a specialized animal spirit guide that shamans, or even shamanic practitioners, they acquire early into their initiation into their practice. So their power animal travels with them whenever they go on a shamanic journey, which is, I think for most of us, we know that it's an altered state of awareness where the practitioner sends his or her soul or consciousness into a non-ordinary reality. And this is a shamanic term for the spirit world. And again, I'll say that it's a non-ordinary reality. And they do this to receive teachings, guidance, and healings. You can, however, have a relationship with a power animal, even if you're not a shaman or a shamanic practitioner. One may come to you in meditations, visions, dreams, or even if you decide to go on a shamanic journey. So it's a highly personal and specialized relationship with an animal, one in which I would say the personality and characteristics of the particular animal that you're attracted to is reflective of your own personality and your characteristics. One very important thing to note here is, this is something that I kind of mentioned earlier, which is interesting, I guess, now in retrospect. In most shamanic traditions, domesticated animals can't be your power / totem animals because they've lost much of their wildness and they're removed from the natural world, which is, again, interesting when it comes to this whole lifelong animal guide. If you remember, I told you that Ted Andrews pretty much said that your lifelong animal has to be a wild animal. They can't be domesticated because they've been too far removed from the natural instinct, I guess, if you will, of that animal. So I guess even your own maybe totem animal of the family / power animal has to also be one that is not domesticated. Not the same for messenger guides, etc. Okay. Another thing that Stephen Farmer points out in his book on spirit animals, which I think is cool, he asks the question as to whether or not insects can be included as your totem / power animals. And in some traditions, the answer is actually no, because of their size and of their nature. However, Dr. Stephen Farmer begs to differ. He thinks that insects also carry with them their own energy, medicine, skill set, and they can be just as powerful. And there are a lot of advantages to working with that kingdom as well. So if you ever go through his work, you'll see that he is an advocate of looking at things like grasshoppers, the praying mantis, as being, you know, your the totem of the family, which I think, again, is very interesting. So if you are asking now yourself, well, what is the totem of my family? It might be worthwhile to take a look at the natural habits of your family. Is there something that they're all attracted to? Is every single family member attracted to books and reading and studying and research? They may all be representative of, for example, an owl as the totem. And these are just random examples that I'm pulling right now. But for example, if everyone in your family, or let's say the majority, is attracted to a life where there's a focus on strength and training, the physical aspects, maybe then everybody might be a bear, just as a random example. So I think that those are, again, ways that you can try to find out what the totem / power animal is of your family. If you're looking for more information on trying to understand what, yes, your power animal is of the family, what, you know, your animal guide is, etc., I do highly recommend Animal Speak by Mr. Ted Andrews and any work by Stephen Farmer. Stephen Farmer even has a really great oracle deck called Power Animals that I work with sometimes, which I feel like is spot on, and the messages are too. Now, The other thing I kind of wanted to say, because I feel like somebody would ask this and my guide just showed it to me, is how can you differentiate a visitation from an animal in meditation as opposed to a message from your guide where they're using an animal symbolically for a message? That's complicated, but I just saw that. And there is a difference there. If you're prone to working with symbology in some aspect during meditation, and that's the pipeline through which your guides use to give you messages, then you will understand intuitively that, okay, that's the message. However, if an animal literally comes up to you in meditation, all the time, consistently, to show you something, to literally take you on a journey, then it's a message from them. You can also get confirmation, though. If you're confused about the two, you can ask that animal, hey, I need you to show up when my eyes are open in everyday life. I need to see you on a billboard, on the back of a car, on a greeting card, on a TV show, something. I need you to show me that it's you. And I can guarantee you they'll do it, because I have asked that myself. And the other thing I would strongly advocate, and this is something I said earlier, create your own animal dictionary. What does that their message bring for you? What does the medicine bring for you? What is the energy of that animal? What is their, how are you symbolically interpreting, why they're showing up in your life? And also note when they did show up in your life, so you know the next time you see that animal, you know what's coming. You know what type of situation is about to come up in your life. Super important to work with animals. You guys, I've enjoyed this conversation. There's so much more I could tell you on a personal level because my guides have used animals. And when I first started opening up intuitively, I started to see heka animals out in nature coming up to me all the time. And it was a weird and magical experience. So if you're interested in this work, please check out some of the books I referenced during this talk today. And I'm sure if you meditate, even on any book, your guide will guide you to the right book as well. You guys, actually, before I cut this off, I feel like I just got another piece of information from my guides they want me to say. So can you have one or more animal guides in your life? Yes, you can. However, you do have your lifelong one that is representative of who you are. Now, the representative of who you are at the core. So for example, the owl is representative of who I am at my core. But I do have other animals coming in all the time to show me this, that, etc. They're helping me out. So they're working with me on multiple levels, which means yes, you can have multiple guides coming in and out to help you, just like you would in the spirit realm with your own spirit guide. You'll have multiple teachers because they're all teacher guides, right? They're trying to give you a message, help you to see, shift your perspective, etc. in this lifetime. So you can have more than one. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me today on everything that I could learn. And I'm sure there's so much more when it comes to shamanism that is totally an alien topic for me, but of interest as well. If you're interested in learning more about your totems, I would totally look into shamanism work. I think it's really fascinating, and hopefully one day I will do my research and be able to present that to you in a cohesive way. Thank you for joining me today. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye-bye.